One with Every Rat. Written by Secrets of Lufnarp and Shakespeare Stole My URL. Narrator, God of Laundry Baskets.
Jitania as Arthur Eggfort.
Black Glass as Cugrash.
Arthur Eggfort was planning his new MacGuffin to hide for the new school year.
Ah,
he thought.
How do I endanger my students but teach them a valuable lesson all the same?
Suddenly he heard scritching just outside his office. Was this leftover magic debris from some ill-advised chronomancy? No, it was...
Hey man, I'm just being a rat here,
said a raspy voice. It coughed.
Do you have any bagels? I like them with everything.
When you say everything,
Arthur Eggfort said,
do you mean garlic and poppy seed and all that, or all of existence? Because I could go for either.
You're an interesting guy,
said Cugrash.
Why does this place smell like dragons?
Ah, well,
said Arthur.
That would be the vice principal who has just been slain in the gymnasium, but pay no mind to that.
All right.
Cugrash said sarcastically, like his day was already so weird. What difference did a dead vice principal make? Arthur suddenly came closer, looking at Cugrash like he had the answers to his next big riddle.
And who might you be, you furry little guy?
Arthur Eggfort finished.
Ah, for a second there, I thought you were going to be like, who are you, intruder? In that scary booming wizard voice.
Who disturbs my fortress?
Arthur Eggfort boomed.
Yes, it is quite fun when I do that. But no, I've met talking rats before. Are you from Bastion City?
I'm from New York City. Greatest city in the world. Where the heck is Bastion? Upstate?
Cugrash realized he was very, very lost. This wasn't even a New York City dragon that was dead in the gym. Did he say he had time portals?
About that chronomancy,
Cugrash said.
If I was a guy who wanted to warn a guy about being turned into a rat in the 1980s.
The end.
How to Defeat the Terror of the Toy Skies. Rambling Company as the narrator.
Pandamug as Rick Diggins, astronaut, and Rich Diggins, businessman.
Orshata as Aelwyn Abernath.
Aelwyn looked around. She was in a strange magical place that she hadn't seen before. She'd heard about time and space being weird from a dean, but she hadn't expected to land in something that looked like the inside of a child's toy crate. From the corner of the room, she heard a strange voice.
Ah, who do we have here?
It said.
I'm astronaut Rick Diggins,
Astro-what?
said Aelwyn with disdain.
Astrologer, astronomer, astronomancer, all of those are words. I do magic.
Well, I go to space,
said astronaut Rick Diggins.
It's obvious, on account of my spacesuit.
You look like a poorly constructed knight-errant,
sniffed Aelwyn.
You look like you've got somewhere else to be,
said astronaut Rick Diggins hopefully.
I don't see anything here I recognize,
said Aelwyn.
Except, is that a cat's whisker?
Rick Diggins gasped.
You know about cats? The terror of the toy skies?
Ah, finally a scenario in which Aelwyn could be smug.
I do.
The man suddenly had a bright expression and exclaimed,
Well, then I have someone you should meet.
Aelwyn scoffed as he went behind a corner and returned seconds later with a mustache on his face.
Wonderful to meet you. My name is Rich Diggins, businessman. You can tell I'm a businessman on account of my mustache.
Aelwyn couldn't believe what she was seeing.
I have a proposal for you,
the strange little man said.
We have been plagued by a terror. I have reason to believe you might just be the right person to help us.
What, a cat?
Aelwyn scoffed.
What's the worst it can do? Vomit on you? Claw you to death?
I see you are familiar with our feline adversaries,
Rich Diggins said.
The claws that strike in the darkness, the perilous hairballs from above. Your absolute self-assuredness makes me believe that this could be the beginning of a beautiful business relationship.
I just can't believe you're afraid of a little bitty kitty cat,
Aelwyn said. A low rumble shook the entire crate, and two enormous eyes the size of full moons came into view. Whisker-like telephone wires splayed out from a humongous mouth.
That's my cue to skedaddle,
Rich Diggins said, tipping his top hat.
Best of luck! The end.
Chapter 3. To Hell and Back. Written by Secrets of Lufnorb, Shakespeare Mayoral, and Pandemug.
Read by Little Red Robin Hood as Fig Faith.
Dr. Fumbles McStupid as Evan Kelp.
The Lord of La Mancha as Gorgug.
Secrets of Lufnarp as Jawbone.
And Shakespeare Mayoral as the narrator.
So I'm an archdemon of hell, right?
Fig told Jawbone.
And I thought I was making it cool. I turned hell into a recording studio. I was supposed to be going to class or something, but I just gotta be a free spirit, you know? But there was one guy, who shouted, "No!" when I told those souls they were condemned to rock and roll. I condemned one man to his worst nightmare. I think about that every day.
Said Jawbone. The massive werewolf with a deeply confusing past was typically a really good guidance counselor. But it really seemed like the bad kids were out of their depth. And maybe he was, too. Maybe he would have better ideas if he took a rest.
You've been under a lot of stress lately. Maybe try something new to relax.
Relax? That's so cringe. I'm the archdevil of rock and roll.
That night, as Fig slipped into her room under the piano, she had an idea. She would commune with the nightmares or something. That was a thing, right? With magic? Maybe with warlock magic, where she was making a promise to herself to... That was confusing. Maybe Kristen was involved. Was she in love with Kristen? Was that cringe?
So the nightmares just follow me around?
Said a voice with a Midwestern accent.
I don't know where they came from. They followed me for as long as I can remember.
Are you contacting me from a hell dimension?
Fig said to the voice.
Probably? I don't know. I'm from Iowa.
Okay, disembodied voice.
Evan Kelp.
Kelp? That name is insane. Do you want to be on a podcast?
Like the radio?
Like I interview you about being a tortured soul. Because I think that's my thing now.
Don't you think there would be better people to interview than me? I really don't know who'd want to listen to that.
What's better than a disembodied voice from Iowa? We can make it real tragic, or a little sexy, or just really, really fluffy.
Fluffy? Like lint?
What?
Fick laughed.
Like, you know, when you wear the same sweater every day for years, and in the places where the blood didn't dry in patches, the fabric deteriorates into lint.
Yeah, I know what lint is, weirdo.
There was a pause, like the voice didn't know what to answer.
So are you going to be on my podcast or what?
Fig said finally.
I could really use someone with a crazed mind like yours to dig into the depth of the human trauma.
Gee, thanks,
answered a defeated voice.
Come on, it'll be fun. You seem honestly insane, and I really dig that right now.
I feel like you remind me of somebody,
said Evan Kelm.
But I'm kind of between planes right now.
I have a recording studio in hell,
Fig declared.
Oh, that sounds like a place I could go if I just tried really hard not to.
With a wild zipping sound, Fig was back within her domain. In front of her was a guy about her age, pretty tall, with long hair. He looked like Adam Driver, whoever that was.
"This is hell?"
Evan said.
"Yeah,"
Fig said with a toss of her head.
"I'm the archdevil of it."
"And you use it to make music?"
Evan said wearily.
"Yeah, rock and roll. It's where my power comes from,"
Fig explained.
"So not from, like, the screams of the tortured?"
Evan clarified.
"I mean, there is that one guy. I feel pretty bad about him,"
Fig said.
"But mostly the screams are, like, being excited about it being so metal."
Evan looked kind of sad and thoughtful. That might just be how Evan looked. But that guy she felt bad about? Evan said he knew how that felt. That his entire life was kind of like that. Bringing bad stuff on people without meaning to. Always trying not to. Always doing it anyway.
"Oh my god, so emo,"
Fig said, trying to pretend she wasn't wiping away a tear.
I have no idea what that's like. Keep talking into the microphone. Maybe this can be the, like, I've been to hell and back podcast. Except most people in actual hell seem like they're having an okay time.
Somewhere beyond the recording studio, Bill Seacaster screamed with delight as his dragon boat speared another minion of the devil himself.
"But I'm not,"
Fig said.
"Life is so stressful, you know?"
"I know."
Evan was being way too earnest. Fig skateboarded away.
"You can't leave me in literal hell!"
Evan shouted.
"Fine, fine,"
Fig said, skateboarding back.
"I'll take you back to my dimension, because I have no idea where you belong."
"Maybe somewhere outside. Fewer bad things happen outside. Like wide, open areas."
"Bad things happen everywhere,"
Fig said.
"Maybe we can write a song about it."
"And your songs have power for good?"
Evan pondered skeptically.
"My songs have power for awesome justice. Do you play keyboard? Or maybe lead guitar?"
"I can try,"
said Evan. It couldn't go any worse than anything else he had tried.
"I like the new guy,"
Gorgug said.
"He's really tall, though. Do you think..."
"He is not your dad,"
said Fig.
"He's like 16, and he knows how to rock."
Evan hit a rad note on the electric guitar. "For great justice." A review from the Hellboard magazine, the top music industry magazine in the Nine Hells. Sophomore slump. Not for Fig and the Sick Figs, who have had their stride with their latest track featuring a guest lead guitar with a slightly more emo sensibility. Evan Kelm, who claimed he's not from around here, in one of the album's early interstitial spoken word tracks, imbues playing with a tragic melange of haunted melodies. The final track on the album culminates in a power chord that cuts off with an abrupt twang as he's apparently sucked into the space between the strings of his borrowed guitar. When reached for comment, Figureth Faith just said,
"Yeah, I think he went home, man."
Despite the emotional sensitivity on display in many of the tracks, the most heartfelt moment comes between the penultimate and the final track, when Faith makes a call to the guy who never asked to be condemned to an afterlife of rock and roll. Speaking on speakerphone, the two reconcile and discuss the ways in which the lives have intervened. Though brief, there's some real closure here. 4 out of 5 anarchy symbols. The end.
This is The Travels of the Lord, written by Phineas, Secret Luff, and Pandamug. Voices include
Black Glass as Ostentatia Wallace,
The Archer as Squawk,
God of Laundry Baskets as Kristen Applebees,
Orchata as Gorthalax,
and Jay Bacon Strip as the narrator. Lord Squawk Erebus was quite perturbed. He had been sent to a meetup with a person who was supposed to be a powerful magic user, but the person sitting in front of him was possibly half his size, if not more at the moment, from being weighed down by more fake necklaces than Squawk had ever had the misfortune to see in one place. He puffed out his chest and looked down on the person.
"Excuse me, but who are you?"
he said in a condescending tone. The girl shot him an almost disgusted look.
"Who am I?"
she asked, exasperated.
"Who are you?"
"I am Lord Erebus,"
Squawk started, when he was rudely interrupted by the creature.
"Are you some sort of prince or something? I was supposed to meet some prince."
She almost said it like a prince was deeply beneath her.
"Some sort of prince?"
Squawk repeated slowly.
"I am only Lord Squawk Erebus of the Court of Birds. My domain is the entire sky, and the sky is full of riches."
"So you got jewels?"
Ostentatious outfit was full of jewels. She had more rings than fingers. She liked to collect.
"Not exactly,"
Squawk admitted.
"But we do need someone who can help us with our invention."
"I'm a dwarf. I make shit. I talk to the god of dwarfs who makes the best shit. You got money?"
"Oh ho,"
said Lord Squawk Erebus, fixing his lavish blue coat.
"I do in fact have money. Now, we have to ask Jeremy Renner."
Lord Squawk Erebus outlined his plan. It involved making it much easier to go visit his cousin and her paramour in the mortal realm. Because when Squawk flew in from court, boy, did his arms get tired! It needed a portal. It needed money. It needed powerful magic. It needed Jeremy Renner, because most things did. Did Squawk mention that he himself was a published author? No, it wasn't important, except that it definitely was.
"When you say the mortal realm,"
Ostentatia said,
"do you mean here?"
"I'm honestly not sure,"
Squawk admitted.
"We might need a cleric,"
Ostentatia said.
"But, you know, there's Kristen. Kristen's not busy nowadays."
Kristen Applebee's, fully dressed in Wranglers and completely covered in tartar sauce, would beg to differ. She was very busy these days. She was running for class president. She was rescuing a god, probably. She had a massively stressful situation with the classes she was taking and probably passing.
"Yeah,"
Kristen Applebee said, because she thought Ostentatia was really cute.
Yeah, I know how to plane shift. Do you need it soon or..."
Ostentatia turned to Squawk. Squawk looked at Kristen.
"What is this tartar sauce?"
"Oh my god,"
Kristen said.
"Have you never done a shrimp jump?"
"What geniuses these mortals be!"
Squawk exclaimed. Squawk, huge plastic cup of shrimp now in hand, and a goblet of tartar sauce in the other, explained the issue to Kristen.
"Now, we want to harness the power of the plane shift to make a permanent portal."
"Hey, security!"
said Gorthalax. He was not security, but as a demon who was also a football coach, he looked scary.
"You know this is a high school."
"No, I was unaware,"
Squawk answered cheerfully.
"But if this is a school of the highest regard, then I seem to be in exactly the right place."
Gorthalax looked at him, and back down at the girls, almost deciding it wasn't worth it. But eventually, he got a little closer to Squawk.
"Well, you can't be here,"
he said, and when Squawk scoffed, he took the Fae's arm and started dragging him off the school grounds.
"Unhand me at once! I am Lord Squawk Erebus! My grandfather, who is in heaven, not dead, will absolutely hear about this!"
Gorthalax chuckled, and Ostentatia joined him with a full-body laugh as the slim Fae got dragged off the campus, watching from further away. When Gorthalax and Squawk reached the parking lot, the demon turned to the Fae and asked,
Do you mind explaining to me what you were doing here anyway?
Ah, nothing simpler. The girl brought me here.
The girl?
Gorthalax questioned gruffly.
Would you mind being a little more specific?
Well, of course. Small thing covered in colored glass.
Gorthalax turned towards the school, where Ostentatia and Kristen had sneaked up closer to witness what was happening.
Ostentatia, do you know this guy?
Gorthalax pulled Squawk from the ground and gestured with him toward the girls.
Sure, I know him. His name is Mr. Squick Air Jordans, and he's from Fairyland? His grandfather runs, the sky?
That's somewhat right,
Squawk said.
Now, if we can just get a hold of one Mr. Jeremy Renner, I believe all of this will become much more clear.
Oh, you should have said so,
said Gorthalax, grinning and getting out his crystal.
I've got his app installed right here.